Welcome to the internet's only South Carolina Gamecocks football podcast that features terrible food takes. Sam, I am on my porch today, so you are welcome for the dulcet side.
Doing good. Glad the Gamecocks got a win. Not going 0-10 this year. We'll talk about Vandy more later, but I want to jump right in with this, DC3. You got called out again on the comment thread on Garnet and Black Attack on the article. Bulldog Cocky goes, "My wife loves scalloped potatoes. Stop disrespecting people's potato choices."
I'm sure she's a wonderful woman. But she just has, that's not even top five in the pantheon of potatoes. I'll take a plain ass boiled potato over that.
No potato.
Go in order?
What is your top five potato choices? What's the Mount Rushmore potatoes, if you will?
Okay.
No particular order.
Yeah. All of these. Not in any particular order, but we're going to have fried, whole baked, but well baked well, mind you. Potato salad. And that's not that Easter with mustard on it bullshit that your grandmama used to make. I'm talking about real deal legit potato salad, scallions, vinegar, all that. We're going to go with mashed potatoes. Now, preferably, if we're going to put mashed potatoes on, that is actually mashed real potatoes, not that shit that comes out of a box. We're talking about new potatoes, boiled, skins on, boom, boom, boom. And rounding out the top, hash browns. And not the crap where you cut a potato into pieces and mesh it with other things. I'm talking skinny, diced, Waffle House style, proper cooked hash browns. There's your top five. There's your top five.
Fair enough.
Scalloped potatoes is in the top 10.
But there's also only so many things you can do with potatoes.
Oh yeah.
There's only like 10 things you can do with potatoes. So like,
you want to know what is bullshit though? Twice baked potatoes.
Explain yourself.
You could just have a baked potato, put the ingredients in it, mix it all around, and voila. You don't have to do it, scoop it, do the thing again, and then give me some puree on top of. It's a falsehood.
Richard, I suggest you never come to my house for dinner.
False advertising.
Did you hear what I said? I suggest you never come to my house for dinner then.
I said, well.
Because we have fundamental differences when it comes to potatoes, apparently. Because I don't know if our listeners remember, but like 2 years ago, we got into an argument about Thanksgiving cuisine on sweet potato casserole, and it was like Clemson week.
Which is fun because we're going to ruin Georgia's Thanksgiving dinner.
And instead of previewing Clemson like we should have been, we got into not a heated argument, but a friendly argument over Thanksgiving cuisine. Now, the one thing we can agree on, you texted me earlier this week about the cranberry sauce. That is just an awful, awful –
patently wrong.
Also, we were talking about this right before we aired. I mean, we were in mid-season form before we even started recording. What psychopath came up with stuffing and said, "Hey, who wants some of my turkey butt bread to go along with the turkey?"
It's, well, hey, y'all, I got an idea. And so we got all our base. Let's shove a loaf of bread in and see what happens.
I'm telling you, without researching it at all, I'm fairly certain, just because of like the idea behind that, it kind of has a very Depression era feel to it. Because Depression era people use literally everything.
We got to make this burn last, and so we got all this liquid. Right. What are we going to do with it? This bread, it tastes terrible. Let's shove it up its ass and see if we can make it last another week.
Without doing any kind of research and not knowing anything about stuffing, I'm just going to take a wild gander and say some depressed, not mentally depressed, economically depressed, some depressed family in the Midwest, in like rural Indiana, said, you know what? I'm going to put this loaf of bread up this turkey's butthole and bake it.
Again, we get back to it's all Indiana and Missouri's fault. So let's talk about it. Let's let Missouri some credit this week because they actually land on the winners. So listen, I don't know if anybody saw this, but Mizzou's band, God love them. They don't even have to socially distance in their stadium because nobody shows up anyways.
They're kind of like Vandy in that sense, right? I mean,
y'all just come.
Hey, so I want to make a point about that before we really get to Vanderbilt. We're talking about the lack of social distancing.
That's a good point.
Did anybody really notice a difference in the crowd level with Vandy this past week?
No.
No, the only thing I noticed is that whenever we did something good, our fans weren't there to make noise. That's the only thing I noticed different. But other than that, it just sounded like a normal game at Vandy.
It's nothing but that stupid foghorn. That's all it is.
Anyway, you were going to say Missouri is winner of the week, but after you're done with that, I actually have – I'm going to make them my honorary loser of the week, but you can go first.
Ooh. I'm interested to figure out what that's all about. But, I mean, really, for me, I love a solid just stick your neck out there. Oh, neck. It's a fun way to put that. I don't know if anybody saw this, but Missouri's band, after they scored their first touchdown at LSU yesterday, Missouri's band – played Neck. Now, if anybody is not familiar with the Sam, would you call that a mid-1980s kind of disco song that turned into a hip-hop song that then got turned into a HBCU marching band song, but then LSU took it, and then that's when it really started to have this cult popularity?
Yeah, it's a song that has a cult following only because LSU last year played it when they scored, and because LSU is so prolific on offense, they were playing it like every 30 seconds last season. Nobody really knew it existed until last, like mainstream America didn't know.
Probably like 2 years ago, because again, you've got who was it that offered to pay the fine?
I don't know.
An LSU player offered to pay the fine for the LSU.
I think it was because Odell Beckham.
Odell Beckham, that's exactly what it is. Odell Beckham offered to pay the fine because the NCAA, they started playing it. And, well, if you guys are not familiar with the song, well, it's a little payback. A little racist from it. Yeah. It references something. I'll just let you go with that. If you know, you know. If not, got it.
Look it up.
What's even better is that they didn't even have to change the tiger part of it. And to watch Mizzou's pasty white band do it, and I don't know if you've seen any video of it, but they're just normally. Jacksonville State does a ridiculous version of this. And LSU does an incredible version of it. And it is very, like, they're in it. They're playing their band and they're doing their thing. To watch Mizzou's band kind of go like, like they're just playing in high school choir, really. And then they got really uptight about it, but they went ahead and just leaned in and did, you know what? especially considering what could have gone down had LSU actually just turned around and put their boot on Missouri's neck, which everybody thought they would. Can we talk about that final?
It's interesting that you say that, because it looked like three or four different times that LSU was getting ready to just blow them out of the water.
Oh, LSU had the upper hand four different times in that football game, and I'll get to talking about having four different upper hands in the game. Auburn, hello. But yeah, oh, I completely agree. I really, really loved it. It's like the nerdy kid at a bar that tries to lay claim to a hot chick and is like, that's mine, and stands up to the big dude. The guy swings at him, misses, swings at him, misses again, and then swings at him and trips on a bar, on a
stool. Are you making a pretty direct reference to Drinkwitz versus Ed Orgeron?
Yeah, I kind of am.
Drinkwitz is a pretty nerdy looking dude.
I kind of am.
And, like, I'm not knocking him. He came in and beat our ass with Williams-Brice last year with App State. I'm just saying he looks like a nerd.
Not saying he doesn't deserve that job, and I'm terrified of that matchup.
Yeah, I am too, terrified especially of that now. Matchup. Although, I'm thinking LSU's not very good, because if you look at what Mississippi State did to them and then look at what Mississippi State has done since, that tells me LSU's pretty primed to go, like, 3-7 this year. Unless something turns around quickly on defense.
Boy, oh boy. How did Kentucky get 6 interceptions? That's another story probably for another time. Okay. Because you're probably going to touch on it in your segment. But, y'all, seriously, Mizzou doing that, sticking their neck out, playing neck, is pretty awesome. Also, how in the hell is UNC number 6?
I don't know. It's one of those things
you
where
get extra credit for starting a week early. Like, what is this?
It's one of those things where they keep beating teams that were good in the 90s, like Virginia Tech. And, like, I get it, y'all. Like, you beat Syracuse, good. They were pretty good in the 90s. You beat Virginia Tech, they were pretty good in the 90s and early 2000s. But, and I'm going to get to this later with another team, but it's a lot like, I mean, you see this a lot, right? I mean, Michigan, good in the 90s, early 2000s. Yeah, they're always highly ranked. You know, Virginia Tech, highly ranked. Well, UNC's beating these squads, and it's like, oh, well, they're beating teams that were good 30 years ago, so they must be a good team. Right?
So you mean beating the brand name is better than actually beating a good football team?
And they're not even like brand names anymore. They're like former brand names. Like, nobody pulls for Virginia Tech anymore. Nobody cares about Virginia Tech. Like, seriously. Virginia Tech's a team nowadays, and unless they're playing somebody that's legitimately good, you kind of forget they exist.
That's fair.
Right?
Sorry, I just had to shoo away a spider.
That's okay.
It's agreed, but then again too, like let's just jump square into my loser for the week.
Right,
doing this weird stuff in the top 20.
They're always inexplicably ranked. Virginia Tech, I don't get it.
Tell me any year in the last 25 years, and you say Virginia Tech number 19, you're gonna be like, I guess. I don't know.
But it's almost like it's just because it's a default ranking for them. Like, they're just automatically stuck there. Right?
Well, I mean, it's not that they're stuck there. It's that I think that they're kind of just almost given. Hey, you guys are – at least you're not Virginia. Here, have this. You know,
well, that's what I mean by
you know, the ghost of Frank Beasfield just – passes around.
Yeah, I meant like stuck there, like by the voters, just like kind of put there.
They are. I mean, I guess that a lot of that ties into, you know, you look at a majority of what the top 25 is and some of the comedy that's involved there. you know, notwithstanding Oregon, who continues to climb in the rankings despite not even having a millimeter of inclination or a possibility of playing football this year. But I mean, you look at Ohio State, you look at everybody. It's like, look, hey, if you won a national championship in the last 20 years, you're here until something.
There's a lot of things that have been going on in Oregon this summer and this fall. Football ain't one of them.
It's darn true. And
the activities that have been going on in Oregon do not justify a top 25 ranking.
That's fair. That brings me to this break in our programming. The Gabbycast, brought to you by Trader Joe's and Rosemary Nutmegs. Not really.
Are we allowed to make them our sponsor? Do we have a contract?
No, I don't know.
Okay. There's well, no they're going to find out. Trader Joe's CEO going to listen to the episode this week and hear that.
Speaking of things that are happening on the West Coast.
Right.
Let's get to your losers and winners, buddy.
So I'm going to do an Alex thing. Everybody remembers Alex. Wish you'd come back.
And we miss him, and we welcome him back whenever he wants to.
Anyway, so we all remember when Alex had Baylor as his loser of the week for like a year and a half, right?
His loser emeritus.
Right. So I'm going to kind of take notes from Alex and apply that to my own loser of the week for as long as I can. And I'm going to go with Texas. Texas is emphatically not back. Look, that Oklahoma team they beat is not very good. Same Oklahoma team that has lost to both Kansas State. And I'm blanking on the other one. Let's see. Who's the other loss? But they do have two. Oh, Iowa State. And, like, yeah, Kansas State and Iowa State are okay. Like, they're pretty good football teams, you know. But are they teams that Oklahoma should lose to? No, absolutely not. Are they teams Texas should lose to? No, absolutely not. I mean, they've gone from number 5 to number 3 to number 18 to unranked, Oklahoma has. And Texas lost to them despite Oklahoma blowing a 31-17 lead in the last 4 minutes of the football game. I'm pretty sure it was right? It was a very Lorenzo Ward-esque meltdown there. So, Texas loser of the week. Also, what's up with Gus Johnson and his football analyst partner saying Sam Ellinger is the best QB in Texas history?
Yeah, does he not remember a couple of people?
Vince Young and Colt McCoy stand out. Just in recent
years. And that's memory. Just in the last 10 years.
Right. That's like the last two decades. Don't even get us into the 90s, the 80s, the 70s. You know, back when Texas was actually good.
Well, and also back when Texas was quarterback country. I don't know.
Also, honorary loser of the week, Missouri and their poor camera angles in their stadium.
What the heck was with that?
So, I have a theory.
It was like there was somebody sitting in this where the student section should have been, just like, right. You know, whatever. I'm a media major, and I'm just going to sit here for 4 hours.
Their camera angles are always bad, even when they're the prime time, like, ESPN game. The stadium, I don't think, is conducive to, like, TV broadcast. Which is a strange thing.
Have you ever been there?
Thank God, no.
Okay, so I have, and I've got a theory about this too. That stadium is very, very it's odd in how it's shaped, and I know that everybody's going to love how I'm doing this because nobody can actually see what I'm doing. The stadium is a low slung bowl that kind of it scallops up. It's almost like a twice-baked potato, just a very little twice-baked potato. And there's not a lot of good spots for it. Because it is so small and it's so compact, I really don't think there's a good place for it to be.
That's what I mean, is that the camera either has to be way too high or way too low.
Exactly.
The camera's either where the press box is, or the camera is like on the third row from the 20-yard line. Which, contrary to popular belief, that spot in a football stadium is not a good spot to watch a football game because you can't see anything. Three yeah. rows up on the 20-yard line. Anyway, so honorary loser of the week, Missouri and their poor camera angles in their stadium. Winner, fans of high-scoring football games everywhere. No defense was played yesterday in major college football. It's almost like, I know we've kind of been getting here for a while, and maybe the era has come, and I'm just now kind of accepting it, but we're really seeing a change in the guard here in college football. It's going from a very defensive – or it's gone from a very defensive game to a very offensive game. Very offensive-oriented.
Alabama scoring 63 points. Was it 63? Yeah, 63.
Well, how about Alabama giving up 45 points?
That's just – I mean – You would not want to have that happen if it were not to anybody else other than – I think that maybe Nick Saban just was like, you know what? Lane Kiffin kissed my ass in the press conference last week. Maybe I'll just let him have a couple here and there. Maybe keep his job. You know, he's just making good on his adult children. That's fine.
Speaking of Lane Kiffin and his adult children, we all saw what Lane said about Nick Saban and the group text he has.
The absolute weirdest thing that I have ever heard out of Lane Kiffin's mouth, by the way.
Pruitt, Muschamp, and Kirby Smart and Lane Kiffin have a group chat. And Lane Kiffin said, we all have the same father, referring to Nick Saban.
That's literally the weirdest that's ever come out of his mouth.
And he said a lot of weird shit in the past.
Yes. So that's saying something.
So winner of the week, fans of high-scoring football games. Also, if I'm an Ole Miss fan and 4 weeks ago you told me we'd roll up like 600-some-odd yards of offense and 45 points against – or 48 points, whatever it was, against Bama, if you told me that a month ago, I would feel pretty good about our chances. But, alas, Ole Miss's defense is just terrible. I mean, they might have the worst defense in Power 5 college football. And I know they played Alabama, but, damn, they've given up that kind of yardage and points to everybody they've played. The LSU-Ole Miss game might legitimately end up being 70-66.
Easily. And their offense is so much fun to watch. And we like to poo-poo Lane Kiffin just because he's a weirdo on levels that not a lot of people have ever seen, but it's so fun to watch him coach an offense. But again, on the other side of the ball, Lord have mercy.
Now, also kind of credit to Lane Kiffin. He has straight up called out his defense a couple times. He said a couple weeks ago when asked by a member of the media, how do you improve your defense? He said, we got to get better players.
Hey, you know what?
And you know what?
What you and I were talking about the other day? Hey, at the end of the day, you can have all the talent you want. If the position coaches can't coach you up, talent don't mean a damn thing. On the flip side, if you've got somebody that's just not capable of doing what you want to do, that's another problem entirely.
And this is not exactly the first season that Ole Miss has had defensive problems either. They've been a bad defense for like 3 years now, 4 years now. So they've been
defending morality for kids.
Speaking of bad defenses, we played as a pretty bad defense yesterday, especially in the second half. What are your thoughts from Vanderbilt, DC3?
Hey, quick, how many scholarship players does Vanderbilt have?
56 yesterday.
56, correct. That is exactly correct. That is the number that was touted at least 37,000 times yesterday on the cover.
DC3, did you also know that Jake Bentley left high school early to play quarterback at the University of South Carolina?
And did you also know that that Duke doesn't make academic exceptions for players in athletics?
Also, did you know Joey Pancake hit a home run on National Pancake Day? Why do we always get stuck with the super repetitive crap from announcers?
Well, because football games and baseball games take a long time and beholden to actually talk. Like, if there's dead space, the announcer just says, like yesterday, for example, and I'm going to get here for this, but it's a little disheartening that as good of a player as DJ Shockley was, he is not fit to be in a college football booth. All he does is just talk, and it's just random stuff pulled from the talking points that whomever this intern is at SEC Network is just like, here's a bunch of facts. If there's nothing going on, Shockley feels compelled to just be like,
so what you're saying is he would be a good fit on the GabbaCast.
He'd have a lot more pedigree coming in. I mean,
right. And at least
the pay is, I'm just here to tell DJ right now, if he's interested in joining our family, the pay's not very good. But
yeah, pay's pretty awful.
It's bad. You know, like, but you make a great point. It's just, why do these narratives exist in sports announcing? I mean, they just don't have to. But also, too, why does every time anybody ever plays Vanderbilt in any sport ever, you can beat them like a rented mule, but yet still feel like you ground out an overtime win? Now, this was not a five overtime thriller. Oklahoma, looking at you. Or maybe it's just that, like, from our perspective, Gamecock fandom comes standard with this Stockholm syndrome package, but this was just the most stressful thing to me. And I don't know if it's just me watching from the couch, but it was the most stressful 36-point win ever. I mean,
34 yes, points, was, point taken. Yeah.
34. Math is
hard.
It was so satisfying watching Dak Joyner play and finally on his first freaking, again, can I say that, like, that was his first carry of the game?
I think of the season, actually.
Of the season, it a knee-breaking, game momentum shifting touchdown run.
Well, the game was pretty much over.
It was, but still, nobody knew what was going to that play had no result other than touchdown from scrimmage.
That's right? Actually the only time he's touched the football this year.
It is the only time he's touched the football, and he did not have another carry for the rest of the game, if I recall correctly.
Between both rushing and receiving, that's the only time he's touched the ball.
Okay, that's my only review that I think that needs to be reviewed. Is you moved him positions for a reason, and he showed that there's a pretty good reason why you moved him positions.
Now I think he needs to continue to improve and getting open when he runs routes.
Oh, exactly.
Quarterback's not going to throw you the ball if you're not open. Get open, he'll throw you the ball. You might drop it. Actually, play for us, you probably will drop it.
You will. Nick Muse got his thing pointed out. Xavier Leggett, still, I think, my unsung hero. Shai Smith had a very good game, and Colin Hill is starting to look like a very good fit for the other players on this offense.
Yeah, for what we have right now, we really need a quarterback that just doesn't make mistakes.
Yes, and that's exactly what I'll get to with Auburn. But give me kind of your thoughts on what you felt like Saturday shook out.
And I have the game on in the background here. It's on mute, but I have it running for my recording yesterday just to try to freshen up a few things in my brain. But they just before we get to anything else, I know we give SEC officiating a really hard time, And we're going to talk about that more later because they really screwed the pooch against Arkansas. Arkansas should have won that game. They got screwed against Auburn last night. Yeah. But just saw the highlight of the targeting call on Vandy early in the game that was overturned and ruled to be not targeting. It's the one where it's around midfield. Colin Hill slid, and it looked like he was sliding a little bit late. And the Vandy guy had already committed to tackling. And as he slid, naturally the target area lowers itself. But since the Vandy defender was late, or not late, had already committed to tackling, and he didn't lead with his head, his face was up, he hit with his, you know, front of his helmet and his shoulder. They overturned the targeting call. And that's something we don't see enough in today's game, is targeting get overturned. A lot of referees seem to think that, oh, well, there was helmet-to-helmet contact, so it's targeting. Well, no, that's not targeting. Targeting is when you lead with the crown of your helmet and or you launch deliberately into the head of the of a defenseless player. Defenseless player. They have it on the screen right now. I'm going to read the rule.
15 well, I mean, you can
Go ahead. They got the rule right here. 15-yard penalty and declared ineligible for further participation in the game when forcible contact to the head, neck area of a defenseless player or hit by the led by the crown of the helmet. Neither one of those things were true because the a lot of the times the defender has already committed to tackling the guy, and it's not his fault that by the time he commits to tackling, the quarterback, whoever, is committing late to sliding and giving up, and then the target area being from the neck down changes dramatically. And once you've committed to hitting somebody, you can't change where you're going. Your momentum is already carrying you that way. So I know it was Vandy. I know it was the other team, but good on the refs in that particular situation overturning that call. That was a right call. That was not targeting. I'd like to see that, you know, happen more because there's a lot of calls that are deemed targeting that are not targeting. And we've seen that way too much since the targeting rule became a thing. And I'm for the targeting rule, protecting players, all that stuff. I'm here for it. But we also need to get it right. Okay, and it's not fair to kick out defensive players when there's nothing they can do in a particular situation to change where they're trying to hit somebody after they've already committed. So good on SEC refs in that particular situation. I'm also going to dog SEC refs here a minute. There was a sequence yesterday where we blitzed or one of our defensive linemen got through. And the Vandy offensive lineman decided to tackle him around the head and take him to the ground. Well, they threw a flag and called holding. Well, apparently that's only holding when you're not playing Tennessee in a tight football game.
Oops.
Just saying. Because if that same call was made 2 weeks ago, we're probably sitting here at 2-1. But, you know. We're getting a little off track here. If you listened to us last week, you would know in general that we predicted Carolina would fart around in the first half and then pull away in the second half. Now, I don't think either one of us thought we would dominate in the second half like we did. I mean, we completely whipped them on both sides of the football in the second half. And Vandy's play had a lot to do with that, but I also would like to think that our play had a lot to do with how Vandy performed. But we should have beat them like that all game, but especially in the second half. I'm going to touch on this, but I mean, it is part of it, DC3, considering how, one, how bad they are, and two, how shorthanded they were yesterday. I mean, you know, with as bad as the first half was and as frustrated as I was, logic told us that because they were so shorthanded, they were going to 99% of the time, they were going to fall apart in the second half because they were going to get tired. And we saw that, I think. I am now a little bit off, you know, a little bit different topic here. I am sick and tired of watching our team do really undisciplined stuff, the constant jawing. There's two things I want to touch on here. One, we'll start with a positive. Shiloh Sanders, I thought, played a really good game yesterday at safety. He hits hard. I think he's better in coverage than Roderick, which, well, we talked about that last week. I'm going to stop there. But Shiloh Sanders played really well. But there was one particular play that really got under my skin is he hit a guy. It was a good hit, to his credit, good hit. And it wasn't his fault that the guy caught the ball for 30-yard gain. He wasn't in coverage. He was in the back end as, you know, playing his cover two assignment, whatever. But he hits the guy. Vandy just catches the ball for 30 yards, gets hit out of bounds, and Shiloh Sanders immediately starts running his mouth. And at this point, it's like a 3-0 ball game. Dude, you just gave up a third. Your defense just gave up a 30-yard pass, and you're running your mouth. Please shut up. Just be quiet. You gave up 30 yards. That wasn't a good play for us. Be quiet. And then at the end of the half, it seemed like our offensive line was more interested in trying to fight Vanderbilt than they were blocking. If we weren't standing at midfield trying to fight Vanderbilt's linebackers and defensive linemen, I'm pretty sure Muschamp and Bobo wanted to get lined up and take a shot at the end zone. And there was plenty of time to do that before, you know, our guys decided they wanted to get into a pissing match with Vanderbilt's defense after the play. So I'm tired of seeing that kind of stuff. Need to get that cleaned up.
Yeah, hey, Farva, what's that place we like to go to eat lunch at with all the crazy shit on the walls? Shenanigans.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, you're never going to take the next step. As a program, I don't care how many talented players you have. I don't care how well coached you are. And this is just in general. This is anybody. You're not going to take the next step until you show some discipline on the field of competition. I don't care what sport it is. I'm not against talking trash, okay? DJ Swearinger is probably one of my favorite players in the history of Carolina football. And he always ran his mouth. But he and his teammates could back it up. They won, and they won big, and they shut people down defensively. That guy and his teammates were allowed to do that because they were elite, and they knew that. But they also perform 99% of the time. When our guys start winning and winning big, I'll be a little bit more okay with us constantly running our mouths. But until then, go prove it on the field rather than don't talk about it, be about it. If you got to tell people how good you are all the time, you're probably not all that good. I'm just saying. It's something I tell my players, JV basketball. If you got to tell me how good you are, you're probably not very good. So, but all in all, it's a good win. It's good to win big. Here's a trivia question for you. This will show us if DC3 was paying attention to the GabbaCast Twitter feed yesterday during the game. When's the last time a South Carolina – what?
Yeah, asking if I've been paying attention to Twitter is just a fun joke in and of itself.
When's the last time Carolina's offense scored 30-plus points in a football game against an FBS team?
It's got to be that loss to Auburn.
What loss to Auburn?
2017? No. No, I'm going to go ahead and say the Georgia game, 42 points.
The last time we scored 40 points in a football game against an FBS team was November 24th, 2018 at Clemson.
Oh, at Clemson. Oh, so we scored more than – okay. Okay, so that – what I'm thinking about in a victory, so that's the same exact year. That's the squeeze play to beat Georgia that year, and then also scored. What did we score? 35 points against Clemson in a loss.
What's the Georgia thing? I'm not following that.
Isn't that the same year?
No, we lost to Georgia that season.
No, I I'm conflating years. Okay. Well, yeah. Okay, so 2018 versus Clemson.
Forget about wins and losses. It's just about scoring 30-plus points against an FBS team. It's been almost so 2 years. It's been almost 2 years. So that's good. Also made the point that Bobo's offense has been far more productive than McClendon or Roper's offense has ever been, and we're only three games into his tenure at Carolina. Last year, we scored 24 points or more, not counting Charleston Southern. I'm not counting them because they were a terrible FCS team. We scored 24 points or more against FBS competition last season exactly twice. And one of those games was against Florida when we scored a garbage time touchdown at the end to go from 20 points to 27 points. The other game was against Kentucky when Kentucky was particularly struggling. And it wasn't really a good 24-point output. I mean, it was – we really struggled to score that many points. So, Bobo's offense has been far more efficient and far more productive than McClendon's offenses have been or were the last 2 years and Roper's. And this is with us playing at a far more deliberate pace than McClendon's offenses did. The thing with McClendon is he tried to go fast, and the problem with doing that is when you're constantly going three and out, that means your possessions average about 5 seconds. So, yeah. So, Bobo has been pretty good so far. We'll talk about that more later. But I was just going to say, overall, I don't think there's a whole lot you can take away from this game. Just because Vandy was already bad before they lost a bunch of guys due to various issues. Other than that, hopefully it's a confidence booster and gets our guys' morale going a little bit and pushes them over the top this coming week against Auburn, which DC3 is going to preview right now.
I was actually thinking about that year in 2018. I was looking and I was actually trying to jog my memory. The Gamecocks, in fact, scored above 35 points four times that season. And what I was thinking about was that back and forth game against Mizzou that year. So hopefully that does not, in fact, happen.
Gotcha. But yes, before yesterday, the Clemson game of that season was the most recent game where we scored 30 plus points against FBS competition. So
here's what I'm going to think about for this coming Saturday is that the South Carolina Gamecocks do, in fact, not score 35 points. But you're looking at Auburn right now, and speaking about the targeting rule, Auburn got burned against Kentucky in week one on a 100-yard pick six that got turned back because of a pretty bogus targeting.
But that targeting was that was a makeup call after Kentucky got 3 yards into the end zone and they ruled it down at the one.
It was totally a makeup call. But even still, it was just the most bogus.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. It was a bullshit targeting call, no doubt.
So get that once. So Auburn's done two things thus far this year. Both have been questionable at best. Last night, Bo Nix butt fumbled a spike. Let's just say
on purpose.
That.
On purpose.
Bo Nix butt fumbled a spike. And the referees gave it back to him.
Yeah. He is Mark Sanchez.
Yes. And Chris Rodriguez from Kentucky got robbed of a touchdown during the Auburn-Kentucky game. I'm not even going to go back to the pick six that got overturned.
What's even better about the butt fumble is he fumbled. There was a clear recovery by Arkansas, and Auburn still got to keep the ball.
And the ref, it bounces off his foot, and the ref is just like this. Like, I don't want anything to do with this.
It's the same call. It's the same play that Helinski made against Missouri last year. And correct. They called it a fumble.
Intentionally.
They gave Missouri the football, which is the right – it was the right ruling. It was the right call.
You go back to Jameis Winston. You remember the Jameis Winston, like, that way. Falling backwards, that doesn't excuse you of throwing the ball on the ground behind you.
That's the thing. Is they called it a forward pass? How can it be a forward pass if he's facing backward?
And also, if he's 9 yards behind the line of scrimmage,
right?
At that point.
And his back is to the line of scrimmage. And by definition, a forward versus
it has to be in front of the line of scrimmage.
It can't go forward if you're facing the wrong direction.
I don't want to say Auburn stinks, but they could not have been less impressive for me through three games thus far this year.
Can we talk about SEC officiating again real quick?
Sure.
Did you see their tweet last night?
Asking me to pay attention to Twitter is –
okay, fair enough. Anyway, they tweeted this out at 10:35 p.m. last night. Statement on play at 30 seconds ago in the fourth quarter of the Arkansas-Auburn game. During the third down play, the officials on the field sounded their whistles and blew the play dead as they deemed the passer illegally grounded the ball to conserve time as governed by Rule 732F. During the subsequent play review, there is conclusive evidence that the pass was backwards. No shit. However, because recovery of the football was not clearly made in the immediate continuing football action, the ruling on the field was determined to stand under Rule 1232E1. Both the determination of a backward pass and the immediate clear recovery are required to reverse the ruling on the field under Rule 1232E1. Now, the irony here is, or not, I don't know if it's irony or just completely just incompetence or whatever word you want to say for it. Immediate in that paragraph is underlined and bolded twice. I don't know
what it sounds like. That thing where you type 9092 in the calculator and turn it upside down to make it say boobs.
Yeah, I don't know, but I don't know what game they were watching. Arkansas pretty clearly recovered that ball. I mean, the Arkansas player literally jumped on it and said, I have it.
Oh, yeah.
But they're saying, oh, there wasn't a clear recovery, so it's not a fumble. What? Doesn't make any sense. So, SEC officiating, you're just collectively the loser of the year.
Until guilty until proven innocent is what we're saying.
How we run things in the Gabacast.
Speaking of guilty until proven innocent, Auburn, you are going to be the next victim of chaos theory in SEC football this year. Cox win 31-28, it's a game in which kind of trails for a glaring majority of the game and then scores the go ahead with, I'm going to call it, 6 minutes remaining.
So you say we just kind of hang around all day?
It's that same old – it's that same bum fight thing that happens every time we play Auburn where you slap me, then I slap you, then you slap me, I slap you, all the way up until the end.
Except this time we actually get over the hump and win.
And I think that Shiloh Sanders might actually play a pivotal role in that football game because I'm super high on him.
Yeah, I didn't mean to talk down about him too much
earlier. No. I mean, consider the shit talking. Think about who his dad is.
No, I know. It wasn't necessarily just directed at Shiloh Sanders. He was just the guy that did it that particular play, and it stood out.
No, I mean, you look at four different situations. You look at the offsetting personal fouls. You look at the – I mean, there are four different situations in which behavior was an issue yesterday.
But I did think, and Vandy probably had a lot to do with this. It's always a combination of things, right? I mean, the level of play you're playing or the level of person you're competing against plus the level of personnel you are playing with yourself. I thought our personnel was a lot better. We talked about how to fix the secondary last week. Now, Jalen Dickerson did not travel with the team to Nashville. But Shiloh's – we talked about how you need to plug Jalen Dickerson in for R.J. Roderick. Well, what they essentially did was they plugged Shiloh Sanders in for R.J. Roderick. And I'm sure R.J. Roderick tries his hardest, but the secondary looked much better yesterday in coverage overall. than they have the first 2 weeks. Now, again, it wasn't perfect, but it's never going to be perfect. We're talking about college football here. And also, they were playing Vandy. Vandy doesn't have the level of playmaker that Florida or even Tennessee has. So that probably it's a two-headed monster there. But it was an improvement over what we've seen start the year, I thought. Hopefully we can get Dickerson and Kier Thomas back for Auburn. I don't know what's going on with them. Because Muschamp is locking down the injury reports. What?
Oh, sorry.
No. What'd you say?
I was saying, what do you think for Saturday in terms of, like, who do you – I mean, I don't know who's coming back or what. I mean
– Well, you just never know until with Muschamp locking down the injury reports tighter than Fort Knox. I mean, you don't know until kickoff, you know. I mean, it could be – for all we know, they could have been suspended for some reason. I don't want to speculate. I'm not saying they are, and there's no reason to think Kier Thomas was suspended because – I don't think he's ever served a suspension at Carolina in his 5 years. So there's no reason to think he – I'm just saying, you know, everything's on the table. It could have been an injury. Could have been COVID. Could have been contact tracing. Could have been a suspension. Who knows? Hopefully they're back because despite Auburn not being very impressive so far, they are going to be a bigger test than Vandy was. They've really scuffled to beat some teams that we know now aren't very good. I know Arkansas is vastly improved over the last couple of years, but that doesn't mean they're a good football team. That means they're just improved from being a really bad one. Auburn really struggled to beat them at home. I do think Arkansas is much better coached than they were last year. So they have pieces, including an almost 300-pound tight end that can really run. I think they ran the Wildcat with him a couple times yesterday, and we know we have a history of really struggling to stop the Wildcat. You know, this is not the Auburn team of years past. I really want to pick the Gamecocks here. But before I do that, before I make my pick, name the college the football coach for the Gamecocks the last time we beat Auburn. And name the year.
It's in the 40s. Either in the 30s or the 40s. That's not Rex. That's Ben Wright is way too late for that.
Billy Laval.
Billy Laval. Okay. All right. I would have.
1933. We were coming up on the start. I mean, we were not very far away from World War II. I know it was still a while out for America to get involved, but we were in the World War II arena, getting built up to that crescendo in history.
Exactly what we do. We are the most resourceful Gamecock sports podcast on the internet. My computer dies and we keep on going.
So, as I was saying, Billy Laval was the coach. For those of you who don't know, DC3's computer died randomly. It just decided to go to computer heaven. So, or computer purgatory, I don't know which.
R.I.P.
We kind of got disconnected there for a minute. Anyway, as I was saying, Billy Laval's the last and only Carolina coach to beat Auburn. Auburn has some pieces, 300-pound tight end, really run. Pretty sure they ran the Wildcat with him a couple times, and it was a sight to behold against who they play, Arkansas. I really want to pick the Gamecocks, Richard. But it's hard for me to pick them until they beat somebody other than Vandy. So I got to go Auburn 27-24 in a heartbreaker for the Cox.
Oof. Meaning what? Meaning they line up and kick a field goal to tie and send it into overtime and we just whiff it? Or
Auburn scores a really crappy touchdown late to put them over the top.
Okay.
Like back and forth all day. We're up 24-20, and we have fourth and goal. Auburn has fourth and goal from like the 15. and they score a very Gus Malzahn touchdown, give them the win late.
Why you gotta be all Debbie Downer on this?
Because I'm doing an opposites thing. I'm being you from 3 years ago.
Or me from like
yesterday.
The last 38 years of my life. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Also, yeah, it's sure. Auburn, Carolina. This is the kind of stuff that always happens.
That was absolutely the kind of stuff that always happens.
I mean, we remember the throwback, the game in 2011 when we should have beaten them by 40. And they beat us on that bullshit rollout throwback play to Lutzkin-Kirkin in the back corner of the end zone.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, there's – I mean, there's a litany of work that's right there for us, right for the taking, that says, hey, guess what? We can't have nice things, especially against Auburn.
Yeah. So – I forgot to do Twitter questions again. So we're going to do uniform predictions. And then, Richard, because this is the GabbaCast and we can't be fully prepared for the entire show.
You're going to throw me a curveball, aren't you?
I am. You're going to pick your game of the week outside of SC versus Auburn, and you're going to make a prediction.
Okay.
So
let's – all right, so let's
go ahead. Go ahead and start researching that because I know you haven't.
No, I actually kind of have I have one in my back pocket, but I'm not telling you what it is because.
Okay, yeah. Before we do that, I want you to give us your very Jake Bentley-esque uniform prediction.
This is kind of going to go in the vein of what you were talking about with winners and losers. I'm going to stick with it until, especially for an away game, I'm sticking with this until it's right.
We're at home this week.
Oh, that's true.
Now, we've pulled out some pretty ugly uniforms for home games, so, you know.
Okay, so I'm going to stick with the same theme, and I have to apologize because I have a cashew stuck in my throat right now. I'm going to stick with the same theme that we're going to do that tricolor pasta. So let's do, and because quite frankly, because this is just the worst combination that you could possibly come up with, I'm going to go with garnet lids, white jerseys, black pants.
At home?
Yes.
Oh, that's awful.
All we have to do is wear a white jersey. It's the only, or a light colored jersey.
Okay, so I'm going to be a little bit more, I don't know. Just, I don't know. I want, again, I treat this as what I want to see rather than what I think we can, what we think we'll see. So you're getting a good balance here because Richard just purely does what he doesn't want to see plus what he thinks we're going to see. And I do the
just like chaos.
So you're getting a good balance here between Richard and I with uniform predictions. I think we should go garnet white. Garnet lids, garnet tops, white pants with garnet cleats trimmed with white.
Okay.
I think that would look sharp.
Garnet, white. That's that's a really good look.
Yeah, to be totally honest.
It is. It's a clean look. Do I think that it's going to be a look that actually happens? I don't know. Oh, man, we're playing at noon, too, aren't we?
Yeah, but at least we're on ESPN. So this time when there's a catch made and they have to review it, they'll have a camera angle other than just from one end zone.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Because apparently they didn't put cameras in the other end zone yesterday in Nashville. So when they were reviewing that catch that Leggett made, they couldn't go to the other camera to see.
Again, I don't really think – like knowing Nashville State, knowing the stadium at Vanderbilt, I don't think there's really a place for them to hang a camera over there, too, because it's kind of
like an entire empty space where they just plant a cameraman.
Yeah, well, but it's kind of like NC State too. I don't know if you've been there, but it's kind of like NC State that like they don't like ground based cameras. They have to put something up at some point, and the only thing to affix to a structure is off. like, for example, at NC State, it's like the weight room and the campus gymnasium, and the same thing too kind of holds true at Vanderbilt. Like, they can't really affix something, otherwise they're going to have to zoom in way long. But for some reason or another, and I don't recall who it was that told me this at one different point in time, that they have to put it on a building. Like, they don't want to put it on the ground and telescope something up to a preferable viewing point. I don't get that. I don't understand it, but there's a million things I don't understand.
Extremely strange.
There's a million things I don't understand, but that's one thing that I really don't understand.
All right, what's your game to watch for this week outside of the Carolina game?
Is this just for sheer entertainment value? Because
you can't – okay, yeah, to that point, you can't pick Georgia-Alabama. That's not fair. Like, just pure entertainment.
We've all watched that game 500 different times.
In the last 3 years. I know. We all know how it's going to go. So
I've got two. I've got a tie for first. And one is Pitt at Miami at noon.
Good pick. I like that.
The second one is Texas A&M at Mississippi State. And both of those, and for reasons completely similar but wholly different. One, Texas A&M and Mississippi State, and Miami for that matter, we're not really sure if they're worth a shit.
Oh, I know Mississippi State and worth a shit.
Mississippi State's not. But at least Mississippi State is at – I think Mississippi State is at home. That's the good thing. Texas A&M, not really.
Do you remember like a year ago when Mike Leach was king of the SEC?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wait. That was 2 weeks ago. Never mind.
It was literally 2 weeks ago.
Seems like a different lifetime, though.
Both of those games, the home team is the one that is really trying to solidify whether or not somebody still wants to pay attention to them. And Texas A&M and Pitt are great foils.
I do want to say that if Jimbo Fisher loses this game against Mississippi State, it would be a very much a Jimbo Fisher kind of thing to do.
Texas A&M is about to start forking over dollars to get rid of Jimbo Fisher if he craps the bed again.
And, like, he just beat Florida.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but he's going to lose Mississippi State, and they're going to fire him.
Just from a point-blank statement, yeah, if you wanted to talk about a game that you have to watch, it's LSU-Florida, right? Yes, that's a game you got to watch. But from the tertiary angle,
I was saying like in Jimbo just beat Florida yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and he's gonna turn around and lose Mississippi State and get fired.
Oh sure, absolutely. But that's just the way that the Texas A&M ethos goes.
Right, exactly. They're a rich man, South Carolina.
Yes, they are.
And, like, literally a rich man in South Carolina because they're athletic.
But much more militaristic.
Huh?
Much more militaristic.
Yeah, but I mean rich man as in they actually have more money than pretty much every other athletic department in the country.
Yeah, that goes.
I really don't understand how, because it's not like they're a brand name. Like, mm-hmm. They're not a blue blood in any sense of the word, you know? I don't know. So I actually have two games as well, Richard.
But I was supposed to predict this, right?
Yes. I'm sorry. Give us your predictions. My bad. I thought you did that.
Okay. So this is going to be the most Pitt Panthers thing ever. Pitt will, after sustaining, and this is the craziest thing. I mean, think about Pitt and their last. Well, I mean, honestly, other than the game that they played against Syracuse, they won by 3 points against Louisville, lost by 1 point to NC State, and then lost again by 1 point to Boston College. Pitt will upset Miami in Miami by 1 point again, 21-20. Take it to the bank.
That is a Pat Narduzzi game if I've ever seen one.
13-9, no explanation necessary.
Yeah. So who wins the A&M Mississippi State game?
I think A&M wins the game by like 25 points, but I just really want to watch it.
Yeah, I can see that game being just super. Like, also,
it could Kelly be Mond, stupid. It could also be very.
Kelly Mond's one of those quarterbacks too, right? That one day he looks like an All-American, the next he looks like he's never seen a football before. So,
yep.
It all depends on which Kellen Mond are you getting from a Saturday to Saturday basis.
It's a very good point.
If they get bad, evil Kellen Mond, they could be in trouble. It could be like a 6-2 ball game. And that 2 points is very much in play because that's the only points Mississippi State scored at Kentucky last night. So, just saying. And they weren't even a, you know, safety is a defensive thing. So, anyway, so the offense for Mississippi State has not been very good.
No.
I like those picks. But I've got a couple
of
picks.
And don't say Oregon.
Huh?
Then don't say Oregon.
No, not Oregon. My first one is Liberty at Syracuse.
I wanted to say that, but I was just more. Yeah, I know.
And
no,
there's
you did
a couple reasons why. So it's bad enough if you play in the ACC for football, but they've been relegated to the ACC alternate network for this game. That's a nooner up in Syracuse, New York. And it's the rematch after last year's game between the two. When Hugh Freeze coached, and I say coached sarcastically, coached the game from a hospital bed in the press box. Because Hugh Freeze had to have some sort of medical operation or something. So he was in his, like, medical gown in a hospital bed that they rolled into the press box last year. And I remember the quote-unquote handshake between the two head coaches after the game was them giving a thumbs up to each other. As Dino Babers walked across the field and Hugh Freeze, like far away in the distance, gave this little tiny thumbs up from the press box. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when both coaches are actually on the field for that matchup. I lost my other one. Oh, you got to pick Florida State, North Carolina, right? I mean,
see, that was the thing that I really wanted to mess with, because like I said earlier, like, is North Carolina really number five in the freaking country?
Here's the thing. You go back to the 90s, and Florida State, North Carolina, the roles are completely reversed. It's North Carolina that's terrible, and Florida State's number five in the country. And this go around is the other way around. And instead of North Carolina having receivers lining up backwards, you got Florida State having receivers lined up backwards. Now, that hasn't happened this year yet, but it did last year. Florida State receiver lined up facing the wrong way. Shout out to whoever their coach was. Can't remember his name. That's how bad they were. I should know his name, but I'm completely mind blanking.
Dino.
Florida State? Oh, Dino Babers, the coach at Syracuse.
At Florida State, it was I thought you were talking about Syracuse. This is great radio.
Good thing we're not a radio show.
Doggone it.
Willie Taggart,
that's it. Okay, there you go.
So Willie Taggart is long gone, but the product in Tallahassee hasn't gotten all that much better. Their head coach has missed a game because of COVID. They still can't move the ball downfield very well. The defense doesn't know how to tackle people. Sound familiar, Gamecock fans? Just saying. So those are my two picks, Syracuse versus Liberty. And Florida State and North Carolina, two ACC-based games that nobody's really going to watch except fans of those two teams. So, but I think there could be some entertaining stuff. Say what you want about North Carolina. I hate the Tar Heels, but Sam Howell is pretty fun to watch just in a vacuum. Just you're just being objective. He is fun to watch play football.
Fair.
But we'll see. Should be another interesting week of college football. We have our first Wednesday night game of the year this week. Coastal and Louisiana Lafayette play on ESPN Monday night.
It's not quite Friday night action, but it's
– Hey, it's something. It's football. And they're actually two – those two teams are actually pretty decent this year, so it should be a pretty good football game. We have a Friday night game, two Friday night games actually, and then we get started early Saturday with the Gamecocks on ESPN at noon in a socially distanced Williams-Brice Stadium. Dan Mullen's going to cry this week and try to get a full capacity stadium for LSU, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, you know what? I think that if nothing else, a little bit of college football is a long-ass way.
Mm-hmm.
And we are happy to have her back.
Yep, in some form or fashion, glad she's back.
I'm happy mostly for the random complaints that come through, either from coaches, players, the media.
Fans.
The fans, all that other stuff.
Can we talk about how – and, you know, I'm not saying – I'm trying to call them out on it. Talk about complaining. Talk about all the people that were complaining about Texas A&M fans yesterday.
About how many there were?
Yeah. I thought
– You said 50% capacity.
They said 25% capacity. But we also have to remember Texas A&M has the biggest stadium in the nation. So 25% of 110,000 is still a lot of people. So
it's 31,000 people.
It's like there's people out there that don't want people to enjoy normal life right now.
Yeah. Like, without us getting too far in the weeds on all that, yeah. Listen, if you're going to get upset about bright sunshine,
if you're going to be upset one of these
people that are
about,
like, there were five more people at this football game than there should have been.
If you're going to get upset about adults making their own decisions and deciding to go out and do social things, you've got your priorities out of whack. So that's all I'm going to say about that. Everybody knows what kind of people I'm referring to here.
Karens and Stans.
That's not it, but I'm not going to get into that right now.
It's the old Matthew McConaughey thing. Instead of getting your priorities straight, brother, you got to get your priorities crooked.
There you go. Anyway, we're dangerously close to me going off the rails here, so let's just shut it down.
Not a worry. We're never not off the rails. That's why. We are the only South Carolina Gamecocks podcast on the internet. Fact check us on it. Prove us wrong. Tell us. Even better yet, write a review. One star, five stars. Make up your own.
Prove us wrong. If you prove us wrong, we'll still disagree with you. We're still the only Gamecock podcast out there.
Because everything on the internet is either true or completely false.
And apparently in 2020, reality is just what you want it to be.
Make your own.
That's what people have been doing.
Make your own. Yep. It's like Second Life, but real or fake. I'm not exactly sure which. I still can't understand that. Wherever you are, thank you for making us a part of your day. As a rule, always drive safe. Go Cox. Never, ever, ever forget to tip your waitress.